My name is Dr. Tram Jones. Starting in December 2019, my wife and I lived in Haiti. Recently, given the current insecurity, we are out of the country, but we continue to support and work with our partner clinic, L'Espoir-Timoun, with its 53 employees on the ground in the city of Quatibouquet, Haiti.
The passengers queued up as usual in the Port-au-Prince airport. It was February 29, 2024. They were a mix of people. Some were Haitian Americans. Despite the violence in Haiti, they had always found a way to come home, to visit family, and to try to help out their homeland. They were now returning to the safety of the United States. Others were Haitians about to taste another country for the first time. After a year-long wait for a visa, they had been approved to fly to the United States to work and live as part of a humanitarian program. They boarded the airline, the seats all full. This JetBlue flight was one of the few airlines that still flew into and out of Haiti. The door was sealed and the plane started to taxi down the single runway. The pilot steered the plane to the end of the tarmac and slowly turned around, preparing for takeoff. As they started the trundle down the runway, the pilots received reports that a violent gunfight had just begun on the other side of the runway fence. In a split-second decision, they decided it was better to make it out while they could. They continued to throttle up, racing down the runway in the safety of the open skies. This incident, it could be argued, was the moment Haiti finally fully collapsed. Over the next few hours, battles between police and armed gangs would rage around the airport. Several parked airlines were shot, bullets piercing the fuselage and tail. American Airlines and Spirit Airlines quickly announced that their scheduled flights to Port-au-Prince would be canceled. Little did people know that this was the last time the roar of jet engines would be heard in the capital city for months. We have talked a lot about the crisis in Haiti, so much so that we took a break for nearly 2 years on this podcast. It almost began to feel like a pylon, tragedy after tragedy, dysfunction following dysfunction. However, in light of recent events, we wanted to add to our series on how Haiti got to where it is today. After this, we plan to do several podcasts on how to grapple both morally and practically with the current state of affairs. This episode is a continuation of our episodes on the buildup to the current state collapse. In this episode, we'll provide a link to the first four episodes in the notes. Our last episode ended with the assassination of Haiti's president in 2021. And if you want to get an idea of background, feel free to start from the first episode. So we pick back up now in late 2021. The Haitian president lies dead in his home. More than 20 Colombian mercenaries have been rounded up by crowds and imprisoned. In the aftermath, the obvious question becomes, who will lead the country? The recently fired prime minister sent a plea to the international community requesting that troops be sent to stabilize the country. However, in a theme that will be repeated for the next 2 years, the world had no appetite to send their soldiers to the chaotic Caribbean nation. The Haitian government had collapsed to the point that there was no realistic way for it to choose a successor. A group of countries with embassies in Haiti met together to decide who should lead. There were no good options. After discussion, they coalesced around what was perhaps the most logical option. In the days before his death, the Haitian president had nominated Ariel Henry, an elderly doctor, to serve as the prime minister. Haiti, like many other countries, usually has a president and then a prime minister. Henri, it's actually spelled like Henry, had not been sworn in when the president was killed, but that process had already begun. In a sea of bad options, this was probably the most rational choice, perhaps the only choice. With most of the country controlled by gangs, elections were an impossibility. There was no Senate or parliament that could assist. While it feels antiquated for large nations like the U.S. and Canada to, quote-unquote, select a leader for another country, there did not seem to be another option. Ariel Henry would lead Haiti, essentially by decree, for the next 2.5 years. I say by decree tongue-in-cheek. He led by decree because there was no legislature or other body that existed to contradict him. But I also say this because his power extended to just that, a verbal decree. With each passing month, the Haitian government saw a shrinking of its already minuscule power over the country. Henri could make speeches and issue statements, but they had no practical effect on the ground. He was something less than a puppet. He was more a hologram that other countries could point to, as if to say, see, there is a government in Haiti. And I think a lot of people want to know, is Henri evil? Like so many figures in Haitian history, this is up for debate. In the best light, Henri was an out-of-touch, elderly physician who lacked the power to inspire change. Certainly, these faults were amplified by the fact that he was running a government with no funds and no strong security force in a country with multiple armed groups operating. I think it's fair to say that even the best leader would have needed a near miracle to turn the situation around. Others, however, would argue that Henri was a bad actor, making money from the rampant corruption and drug trade in a failing state. And this may be true, but this narrative is not necessary to explain the current situation. He was, and is, not the true source of power in the country. During his time in office, the government continued to erode, and the power of the armed groups continued to rise. In September 2022, Jimmy Charizier, also known as Barbecue, who was arguably the strongest gang leader, blockaded the port in Port-au-Prince. Although his territory had always surrounded the port, and certainly businesses had always had to pay him extortion money to access it, this time he cut everything off. Over the course of the next 2 months, fuel and food became increasingly difficult to find. The potable water companies stopped delivering, and the population turned to drinking groundwater contaminated by sewage. Predictably, a cholera outbreak began. In this milieu, Henri requested again that the international community send a force to help stabilize the state. But no one responded to his call. Eventually, Barbecue backed off and allowed shipments to resume. No one knows why he did this, but it could be anything from Henri paying him off to the fear of an international force coming in. The next year and a half saw a stalemate. At this point, with a fiction of a government in Haiti, the Haitian people increasingly looked to the world to help them out. It became clear that the Haitian state, without assistance, would not be able to regain control of the country. And to be clear, when I say outside assistance, I mean soldiers and police officers. And when I say countries, I mean the Haitian people looked at the United States. I think it's safe to say that the world desperately did not want to become entangled in Haiti. Haiti fulfills every criterion of a nation that other countries don't want to get involved with. First, there is no mineral wealth or economy to speak of in Haiti. Even if you're cynical and believe that the U.S. only gets involved in other countries for economic reasons, there would never be a payoff. Second, there is no clear off-ramp. If someone sends troops into Haiti, they will likely need to remain for a long time. As soon as the UN left the country in 2018, the collapse of the country began. Third, and this will play a role later, the United States was very worried that it did not appear to be colonizing another country. Even if polling showed that a majority of Haitians and the Haitian government desired outside soldiers, after Iraq and Afghanistan, the U.S. did not want to be accused of meddling in other countries' affairs. Even if this was far from the truth, the U.S. did not like the image. All of this led the United States to look around for another country that could help Haiti. Surprisingly, of all countries, Kenya raised their hand. Kenya's security forces have in recent years helped in many stabilizing missions around the world, including in Somalia, South Sudan, and others across Africa. As is usual with most humanitarian missions, they requested that the United States foot the bill for their soldiers. To the United States, this felt like the perfect compromise. Kenya would absorb the casualties, Kenya would not be tarred with being called a colonizer, and their police were accustomed to fighting insurgents in urban settings. Even better, the cost would be minuscule compared to the cost of deploying U.S. soldiers. Unfortunately, as we will see in the next episode, everyone dithered. Countries debated the plan. Kenyan opposition leaders threw up roadblocks, and the situation in Haiti slid more and more into chaos. Join us in the next episode as we tackle the moment that Henri is deposed. This is the moment when the curtain is pulled back and the world realizes what many had already recognized, that Haiti is a country with no government.